Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
90.1 FM, you're listening to Campus and Community Radio, broadcasting from Burnaby on the unceded Coast Salish territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. My name is Nicole Hines, and I'm excited to introduce my guest today. You have no idea, guys, but I'm super excited. Justine A. Chambers is a dance artist and educator living and working on the unceded Coast Salish territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations in Vancouver, Canada. Her practice is a collaboration with her Black matrilineal heritage and with Western contemporary dance and visual arts practices. Her work stresses collaboration, empathy, and the choreography that she sees in everyday social behavior. It has taken her from as far as Hong Kong to Pennsylvania, as well as many festivals and venues across Canada. I decided to reach out to Justine just to chat about her upcoming show, The Brutal Joy, showing at this year's PUSH International Performing Arts Festival in a co-presentation with the Dance Theater. The show is going to take place on February 5th and 6th at the Scotiabank Dance Center. However, I realized that Justine is currently assistant professor in the dance area at the School for Contemporary Arts at Simon Fraser University, SFU, okay, as well as associate artist in the Dance Center. So I'm extremely excited to hear about Justine's journey as well as about the show. So Justine, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh my goodness, thank you so much for having me. I am delighted. I'm so excited for this conversation with you. Yeah.
Yes, I'm thrilled. And the first question that I do want to ask is, I've just recently discovered you. Like, I have been living in the Vancouver area for about 10 years. I'm from Toronto, born and raised, lived in some Calgary time as well. But I'm just meeting you kind of for the first time. And I would love for you to have our listeners who might just be meeting you for the first time as well kind of be taken a little bit on a journey of dance and how, you know, we will talk about the show because I really want to plug that. I think, you know, this is really exciting, but I'd love to hear about your journey.
Yeah, I mean, I think fundamentally I come from a family of dancers, not professional dancers, like real dancers, you know, like
yes,
we dance. Where mm-hmm. dance is part of living. And of course, I didn't think that way when I was younger. But, you know, mm-hmm. as you get older, you're like, oh, yeah, we danced. Like, there's mm-hmm. My dad's a diplomat, and we lived many places. My parents had to do a lot of hosting. And, you know, I think about it, they were quite young, right? Like, I had my mm-hmm. baby at 40, but my mom had her babies at, like, 20 and 25 or whatever.
That was like me.
You know, she had her babies younger, and that means she yeah. was also younger. And I remember like parties where, you know, I'd be sent up to my room, but I'd go watch from the top of the stairs, and they'd all yep. be dancing. I have memories of my parents not at parties, just at home, slow dancing in the living Aww. Room. And with my mom's family, I just sort of feel like you dance, like they're all in Chicago. Okay. And I would spend summers there with them. And, you know, like in the basement of the bowling alley, all the kids would go to the basement of the bowling alley while the parents bowled. Aww. And we would dance and we would line dance. And, you know, they would teach me, you know, because I was like the strange fair-skinned Canadian kid with a weird accent, but they would teach
right.
me, you know, they teach me the Roger Rabbit, they teach me the Cabbage okay. Patch, you know, and like, yeah. I mean, this is how old I am. Now you know how old I am. And
listen, we were the same, listen, we were talking about it. Okay, 50 yeah. for life. Anyways.
50 for life. And I just sort of felt like dancing is just something you do, right? Mm-hmm. Like you hear music and you move and, yeah, and I think that like my mother had the circumstances of her growing up been different and they had more yeah. money or some money. I think my mother would have been a dancer because my mom is okay. a dancer. There is no yes. question. It's just like life goes in other ways. And but I didn't really start my formal dance training until I was 14.
Okay.
I was 14. Before that, I was a gymnast. And
okay.
that was psycho strange, very strange. Strange. But I think mm-hmm. I'm easily distracted. And I think what I figured out is that when I'm doing movement and I'm real, I can stay super, super focused. Mm-hmm. So when I stopped doing gymnastics, I went to dance and I went to ballet. I just thought, oh, well, from one extreme to another, right? So
Of
go from
course.
gymnastics to ballet. But it was late. I started late and I really wanted to try and be a ballet dancer, but of course it was too late. And there were things about my body that, people made it clear to me that it was impossible. It was going to be impossible. It's impossible. So at a certain point, I went to a school. There was a dance company in Ottawa for a long time called Le Groupe de la Place Royale, run by Peter Bonham. And it was sort of an experimental contemporary dance company or modern dance company, but they also had training there, for after school, I could go and train. So I trained there through high school, and was exposed to modern dance, and was and maybe just sort of went like, oh yeah, I'm a weirdo, and I should be doing this kind of dancing. This is this I feel like myself, and I don't feel inadequate when I'm doing modern dance. Like, I mean, you do because it's hard, but not be like, I just felt, oh, there's this other space. And they did performances there. They had a small black box theater. Now it's Ottawa Dance Directive. I performed there last November, which is part of my archive, and we'll talk about that when we get to the work. But there was just something about watching these like strange dances to like Marianne Faithfull or someone like banging on the edge of a drum instead of the drum itself. And I don't know, I think that really, I was like, oh, maybe this is my place. So I went to Ryerson, TMU now, but it was Ryerson Polytechnic University when I
I
went.
remember, yes.
And
Toronto through and through, I
oh, that.
remember.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I grew up. I feel like as a, my young adulthood. I moved there when I was 16, turning 17, and left when I was almost 30.
All right. Yeah, no, you were in it. Yeah, for
Yeah, I
sure.
mean, I still sometimes say I'm from Toronto just
Of
because
course.
it feels like that's where I figured out myself as a young adult, and then you figure
Of
yourself out
course.
as a middle-aged adult, and then now 50 forever.
Of course.
But I trained there, ballet and jazz and modern dance, and we did voice and we did acting and we did anatomy, and it was a theater school, and so I felt like I was in Fame, and like I loved
Oh,
it
I
so
remember
much.
Fame. Oh my
I love Fame.
gosh.
I always wanted to
I want
be
to live
in Fame
forever.
ever and ever, starts now, blood, sweat and
Yes.
tears. And it
Yes.
was like we worked long hours and we made shows, and it was just and the two that there was three teachers there, Nadia Potts and Vicky St. Dennis and Karen Duplessis, who were, they kicked my ass, and they loved me, and I think they saw that I was gonna do it, because as soon as someone says like, I don't think you should do that, that is not gonna stop me from doing much, right? I think that
Absolutely not.
I was like, watch me just do it.
Absolutely.
So,
Yes, hold my beverage. Yes.
yes. Let me take off my earrings. I'll be right back. But I think that I went through that program. It was a 3-year program. I loved it. I think I missed 3 days of school in 3 years. Like, I loved it. I was so
Wow.
devoted. And then got hired immediately into a dance company called DeRosier Dance Theater that really had its big moment in the late 80s and through the 90s. And yeah, it was like a big touring company, like we had huge sets and huge costumes. It was all sort of surrealist dance, like very born from the skull of this wild man, Robert DeRosier, who, I mean, I really learned what it is to be maybe a storyteller with him. Also, the movement was like so impossibly difficult. I was sort of feel like you got broke like a Philly, you know what I mean? When you're like him, like, oh, this is where I learned how to survive on a stage or how to survive a multi-city tour. Lots of costume changes, like, three costume changes inside of one 5-minute dance where you would like flash paper, you'd catch on fire and you'd fall out of this dress and you'd be a horse and then you like the horse dies and you emerge as a monster. Like, it was this kind of like wild, wild stuff. And I stayed there for 5 years and I left the company. I think I started to get unhappy. And then I was like the worst person in the room, and I realized, oh, I'm unhappy dancing. And that was very, very, very devastating for me. So I left the company, I think, in search of work that maybe was a little less fantastical and a little bit more human. So I worked independently in Toronto until I left, and also had, 18 other jobs.
Of course.
Just survival, like you do whatever. Danced in music videos and, worked at like Health Canada doing admin, like I just like whatever job
Story of
would
my
be
life,
flex.
guys.
Like whatever job would be flexible enough to let me dance also was sort of what I was doing. And then in 2000, And four, I fell in love with an American, and luckily I am a dual citizen, so I moved to the States. I moved to LA to be with him. He'd never been to LA and I'd never been to LA, so we thought, well, let's
Oh,
go
so it's
to
fresh
LA.
for the both of you. Nice.
And that was its own wild thing. I mean, I think I learned like LA is not really my city. I felt
Fair.
very Canadian there, you know, like despite like really identifying as like Black American. I didn't grow up in Chicago. I spent my summers there. You know, like I was not American, and it became very clear to me
That
that
you
there were
weren't.
certain things I wasn't accustomed to, like the size of everything. Like everything was so huge in LA. Like the cars were huge, the roads were huge. Also, being in a city that's like built on entertainment industry, I mean, Toronto has that, but not like
Not
that
to
is what
the not
LA
to that
is.
level. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and that, you know, the guy who would clean off your window, like who was the at the gas station would like hand you his like contact card just in case you're somebody famous. Like I was like, oh, there's this like kind of desperation, which is not about being talented, it's about becoming famous, that I found very depressing actually. Like it made me sad. But in LA, like yeah, I danced in a circus-based dance company called Diavolo Dance Theater, and I did commercials and trade shows, and I did like an Intel processing sales event, and Aerosmith opened the event, and like we did our gigs. Like
Random.
it was so weird. I was like, is this how stars stay rich? They do these crazy gigs that mean that are not like bonkers. Anyway, but after about 15 months in LA, I was like, can we go now?
You were over it.
I
You were
don't
over
know about this place.
it.
And I was missing doing contemporary dance, and I was missing being like a part of a process and like all of those things. And I kind of maybe missed the weirdos. It's so polished. Everyone's working to be so polished in LA. I remember I danced with this one woman. I danced in this troupe called Hot Thing. That was backed by Chris Rock, and it was basically high-heeled hip hop burlesque. It was
Random.
fun. I mean, I've done everything. Like, girl, you gotta make money. You gotta make
Fair.
money.
Actual statement.
Yeah, and in the States, I didn't have health insurance, right? Like, you gotta be careful. It's like
Yikes.
this whole like, wow, I'm so Canadian, right? Like, you really feel these things. And I found that, yeah, one of the women that I worked with, she lived in her car. And she had a beautiful Range Rover, and she had beautiful hair extensions and beautiful clothes, but she lived in her car, and that was like, I had a real hard time. Like the humanitarian in me was like, whoa! Like I couldn't quite handle that. So, anyways, eventually we left, and a few pit stops, but we ended up in Vancouver because my partner at the time, he came to UBC to do his MFA. He's a really still is. He's not my partner anymore, but he's really good. He's an excellent artist, visual artist. So we ended up here, and I'd actually never lived like I'd been to White Rock before, but I'd never been to actually in Vancouver before. So it was like, okay, another new city, start again. And when we left LA, I quit dancing. That's part of the story. I didn't dance for a few years. Like I just I also got sad about dancing, and I was like, oh, when I'm sad about dancing, it's so devastating for me because like that's the only thing I'm good at. But I did stop, and then when we moved here, I served I served tables. It was great. I love I actually like of all the side hustles, I think that might be my favorite side hustle. I apologize, my kids in the other room laughing, having a
No,
moment.
no worries. This is the beauty of community radio. We love it. We
It's
love
like family, it's part of it.
it.
I don't know what they're listening to, but they're laughing really hard.
100%.
We moved here, and eventually I started. My partner at the time, when he was at UBC, there was a woman there who, like me, was biracial and was thinking, had built this school, and she was doing her MFA and built a school inside the school, this tiny little school inside of her studio that she called, her name's Christina Podesva, and she made a school that was called Color School. And she was really looking at race and what it means to be a racialized body in some of these institutions. And she invited me. She's like, you're an artist. And I was like, no, not anymore. You know, I don't know what I am. I'm just living, you know. And she said, no, I think you are. And I said, oh, I don't dance anymore. And she said, I didn't say you're a dancer. I said, you're an artist.
You're an
And
artist.
so she pushed me to do a residency in her mini school, and I made some work. And I was back. Like it took very little. very little convincing. I was like, oh, we're doing this again? Okay, fantastic. So I was back, and Vicky St. Dennis, who was my jazz teacher at Ryerson, she has a colleague here, was teaching at Arts Umbrella, and then I get this email from Arts Umbrella saying, oh, my friend Vicky said you're a really good teacher. Would you come teach our students? We need a sub. And then I was at Arts Umbrella for a number of years teaching, just teaching, not totally like I did. I made that little work. And then, you know, but I was like, I don't know. The heartbreak. I don't know if I can handle it. And that's when I was in my early 30s. And then I've worked with these fabulously talented students, like just, I mean, Arts Umbrella students, they're so, so amazing. And then I kind of had this like weird green envy monster inside of me that started to show up where I was like, well, I want to be dancing. I should be dancing. I could do that. You know, I mean, I didn't tell anyone that, but on the inside I was oof.
It woke up.
Sure did. Like I was like, it's time again. So then I was just, then I got back and then I started dancing again and started by making work because nobody knew me. Yeah. And, you know, I was like, oh, that's the best calling card is to like make a little solo for yourself. So people know you're out there and just increment.